So we might finish today. Maybe it depends how beat even I want to get on the last sif, because there's a lot of good stuff on the last sif, and even compare it to Shabbos. You know, so we'll see. Maybe we'll do a little bit of that on Sunday. We'll see if we get to that. But first, just very basically, let's just go back to Shulchan Aruch over here in Siman Kuf Yud Gimel. So in sif hey. Shulchan Aruch tells us that mutter, if he has no kavanah to cook, so then it's mutter. Ketzad ovik chavim shehitzes orba agam kedei lahavir chatziv nespashul ba chagavim. He's trying to clear away the brush. You know, I think that's how they fight they fight like forest fires sometimes, right? It's counterintuitive. How do they fight a forest fire? They light smaller fires. How do you fight fire with fire? Because if you light a smaller fire and you burn away the fuel that would keep the fire going to burn over to the next side, so you've created a charred path where the fire can't travel anymore. So now it can't go anymore. So a person wants to clear the brush in the swamp or whatever. So he burns the whole swamp down, and then there are grasshoppers there. So Reilum Mutarim. Though that's mutter because he wasn't trying to cook. And even if it's a very chashuv amaychul, v'cheinim charech rosh lahavir aseyar, mutter leachol rosh hayaznayim shenitzlu b'shas hacharicha. If you burn, you char off the hair of on the animal's head, you're just trying to get rid of the hair, even though you cooked a little bit of the meat on the head, that's mutter. Aval, kivim, v'shem bishol, gov shihizik hatan, v'lashalbo, that if you heat up an oven in order to cook, and you were unaware that there was meat in the oven at that time, but your purpose in lighting the fire was to cook, then it's going to be aser. So many achronim use this sif to permit pasteurized milk, or any food that's pasteurized, because why are they heating the milk? It's like charichas harosh. They're trying to remove the hair. There's no hair in milk, but they're trying to remove the bacteria that's in the milk. They have no interest or intention of actually cooking the milk. The purpose is not cooking. The purpose is the removal of the bacteria. Right, and this sif was the basis for that psak I told you last week or earlier this week from Rav Shlomo Miller Shlita from Toronto with the guy turning on all the electricity in the house, and that's not a problem. Right, it's really because whenever there's a blackout, you have to worry about Bishalakum because the Con Ed worker the light worker is turning on all the electricity. No, they're not turning on the electricity. Some posts can say yes, by the way, because they say, what, you think they don't know that there are electric stoves? They know what they're turning on. They know exactly what it's connected to. Come on, that's not what they're doing. They're just turning on the electricity. They're thinking of people that need lights, and they're thinking of EKG machines and things like that that need to be powered.
Yeah. Is the pasteurizing milk the same thing by the agam and the chagavim? There's no attention about the
milk. Right, so that's the question, right? Is it the same? No, but there's makom, right? There's makom ladin, right? Meaning, would you say that it's? Meaning, you're making the argument that maybe it should be aser because he knows that he's cooking milk right now. It's just his kavanah in cooking milk is not because cooked milk tastes better than not cooked milk. It's just to remove impurities.
But that's also for the purpose of drinking the milk.
To make it edible. So since I hear, yeah. Yeah, that's a taina. I don't remember who says what. I don't know what policies are, but that's what they suggest. Now in Sif Zayin, the discussion we already had before. Right, first in Sif Vav, Kosher Bishul Yisol Ma'at Bishul Ben Bechila Ben Sof Mutter, a little bit of cooking. So the Yom Chavim puts the basar or kedera al gabe esh, and then the Jew just is megis b'kedera, or the Jew puts it on, the Yom Chavim finishes up, so that's mutter. But the Mechaber does require that the Jew either puts the food on the fire, or then deals with the food once it's on the fire. He continues to stir it once it's on the fire. And Sif Zayin is one of the most fundamental arguments pertaining to Bishul Akum. Ein shkira satanim o'elis el b'pas, av b'shar hamizbashlim, it doesn't make any difference if you light a fire before the food is in it when it comes to bishul akum, only when it comes to pas akum. What matters when it comes to bishul akum? Ela hahanocha dafka. Leficha harotzel vashel b'machvas b'tanur shlo v'chavim. Tzarech sheyitein Yisrael b'machvas l'toch hatanur l'makom haroy l'spashel sham. The Jew has to put the food in the oven. A lot of times people think that, oh, of course I cooked. I prepared the whole lasagna. I made this whole fancy lasagna, and all I asked the housekeeper to do is turn on the oven and put it in the oven for an hour. And then it's going to be ready. But I did everything. I made the whole lasagna. No, you did nothing. You just put a bunch of raw ingredients together in a pan. That is not cooking. Cooking is introducing the raw ingredients to fire, or enabling the fire to impact the raw ingredients. Just throwing a bunch of raw ingredients together, that's not bishul. But then comes along the Rama. V'yesh cholkim esfirilu da'avokas ha'esh ochita b'kol mahani lini bishul k'mol l'inyin pas. That it works for bishul just like pas v'chein ogin. V'afilu chita b'lo kavana mahani u'molil. Even if you're not having kavana when you do the chita. V'yeshom da'afilu lo chita yisrov lo hishlech sham kisem rak shavaz chom medlika esh me'esh shal yisrov. Sorry, and then yesh omrin, this is a third chita that we discussed this right when we started the simon. The third chita that even lighting esh me'esh is good enough. So the Beis Yosef and the Darkei Moshe, if you look there, it's a machlokes rishonim. Rabbeinu Yonah holds that in order for food to be considered bishul Yisrael, the Jew has to, like the Mechaber, the Jew has to put the food on the fire. But the Yosef HaHeter says that all the Jew needs to do is turn on the fire or stoke the coals or throw in some wood. And then you have the Shita of the Maharam that's quoted there, that the Jews do not even need to stoke the coals, just eish me'eish. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens like Rabbeinu Yonah, only if a Jew puts the food on the fire. Is that considered participation in the cooking, and is it bishul Yisrael? If he just turns on the fire and then a non-Jew puts the food on the fire, that's asur. But the Rama is mekel. Comes along the Shach, Siv Katan Yud, says the Shach, V'afiyu l'chita b'lo kavanu b'hagash b'sof sefer Yisrael v'heter ha'or klam elam gimel pasak shetzarek she'ichavim l'sayeyo b'tikon ha'esh l'hakshir. That disagrees with the Rama. If you turn it on without kavana, then it's going to be asur. And then the Rama quotes that third sheet at the end. So the Aruch HaShulchan points out, which we know, that we only rely on that third sheet that the Rama quotes, that esh from an esh that the Yisrael lit, that having the yahrzeit candle that the Yisrael lit, or the pilot light that the Yisrael lit, is only okay b'shas hadchak. It's not okay when it's not shas hadchak. So, yeah.
So I know this is more of a general question, but if a Sephardi is eating at an Ashkenazi...
We'll get there. Yeah, that Sephardi eating Ashkenazi restaurants, Ashkenazi yeshivas, Ashkenazi homes, so we'll get there. So Shulchan Aruch tells us in Sivvav, like we saw, that the Jew could participate in the cooking at any stage in order to make a bishul Yisrael. Meaning, if a non-Jew begins to cook a dish by turning on the fire and putting the food in the pot, and then it's not all lost, right? You know, oh no, now this is it, now it's done. No, a Jew could partake in the preparation of the food in the beginning or the end, and the food is going to be mutter. But look in Sif Tez, what does he say over there? That in bishul ovikadim kemachu ben drusayim, the gomra Yisrael yesh leser, Elam Kain, who Erev Shabbos Erev Yom Tov, Sheyeshevs Meruba B'Davar. So in Sif Tes Shulchan Aruch says, if the non-Jew cooked it until Machu Ben Drusai, let's say a third cooked, a half cooked, Machlokas, and then the Jew did the rest, the food is going to be Asur unless it's Erev Shabbos Erev Meruba. So it seems like a shtickel stira, right? Because Obit Chila Obasov, that's what he says in Sif Vav, that you can participate at any time, either the beginning or the end. And then in Sif Tes he says, if you're a third of the way in, it's too late. Now once it already gets to Machlokes Ben Drusai, you're not going to be allowed to eat the food, no matter what the Jew does afterwards, unless it happens to be Erev Shabbos. So Pri Chadash explains the case of the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Tes is only if the food was removed from the fire after it reached Machlokes Ben Drusai. But if it never left the fire and the Jew continued the cooking even after it's at Machlokes Ben Drusai, that's Sif Vav. Meaning Sif Vav was that you notice the food on the fire, so you give it a stir and you throw some spices in, whatever you do to help it along. So that's what we say, obitchila obasov. But if a food was cooked kemachu ben drusai and then removed from the fire, so pasuk, that's the end of the cooking. So the initial cooking was finished and it was done entirely by an obitchavim, it was done entirely by a nachri. That's a chepsa di yisura. So there's nothing you can do afterwards to be matirin. That's how Pri Chadash learns. which is, you know, which would mean that the deos that we have in Siftes is really about the one chakira that covers this entire siman, is whether Bishal Akum is a cheftzav machalos asuros and as such can never become mutter again, or whether it's going to come up again at the end of the siman, or whether Bishal Akum is not a cheftzav machalos asuros. It's you have to judge it bashar husham, you know, where it is at that stage. And something that was Bishal Akum may not be Bishal Akum afterwards. However, others learn the Shulchan Aruch like the simpler reading. Once the food reaches Machu Ben Jusai, then Jewish intervention just doesn't help anymore, even if the food's still on the fire. Sivav, that says that a Jew who partook in the preparation at the end, means the last little bit before Machu Ben Jusai. Meaning Basof means Basof of its inedible stage, that at the very end, right before it becomes edible. The Rama disagrees with Shulchan Aruch. The Rama says that when the Jew partakes in the cooking at any stage of the food's preparation, then it's going to be mutter, right? V'yesh matirin b'chol inyan. The Rama in Sivav adds that even without the non-Jew's help, the food would have been cooked. The food wouldn't have been cooked. Meaning, whatever you did wouldn't have done the trick. You needed the non-Jew's contribution to make it happen. Then it's going to be mutter. And the Shach points out that the Rama is l'shitaso and sivzayin, that if a Jew partakes even minimally in the preparation of the food, which means normally I throw a toothpick in a fire and dinner doesn't come out, right? I mean, clearly, without the non-Jew's involvement, my throwing a toothpick in the fire or my chitur b'kachalim wouldn't do everything. So you see that the Rama clearly says that you're allowed to assume that it's considered Bishul Yisrael, even though you know, when you're being honest, that there's no way you would have dinner if not for the fact that the guy helped you out over here. Shulchan Aruch Sefiyot tells us, Hiniach Yisrael al gabi gicholim omimos, shalohayu roilus bashalem. There are coals that have a little bit of heat left, but not enough to actually cook, kemach ben shesai. Ubo ovicham v'hafach bo v'nispashal aser. Then a guy comes and it's hafachbo and he flips it over and he moves things around and now it cooks. Then it's going to be asim. And the Rama doesn't say anything. You would have expected the Rama to say something. I throw a toothpick in and that's enough to, over here he introduced the raw meat to heat. It just wasn't enough heat to get it to the point of Machu Ben Jusai. And then later on, the guy finishes up. So some suggest, yeah, because he already told you in Sivav that that's good enough. So he doesn't need to repeat it over here. But of course, the Rama would disagree with this machaber also, because of course the Jew did something. However, the Shach in Sivkat and Ches points out that the Rama is in total agreement with the machaber over here. Right? It's a long Shach on the inside. But the Shach writes that we're talking about a case where the non-Jew lights the fire and then the Jew puts the food on coals that can't cook it. So the placing is not enough of a maisa to be Bishul Yisrael, because when he places it, it's like putting it out on a hot day. It was 90 degrees outside. I introduced it to heat. I took it out of the fridge. I introduced it to heat. No, the heat that you introduce is not halachically defined as heat. It doesn't halachically count as anything unless it's the kind of heat that would be able to get it to a point of Bishul. There's an interesting discussion when it comes to Bishul Akum, when it comes to an induction stovetop. You ever seen an induction stovetop? You know what that's about? An induction stovetop, the way it works is that it has an on switch, so you turn it on, and when you turn it on, if you put your hand on the stovetop, it's totally cold. And when you put a pot on the stovetop, the interaction of the metal with the stovetop does something where molecules start moving around really, really fast and it generates heat. So it's magic. But you turned it on. You turned on the induction stovetop, but it was ice cold when you turned it on. Would Rama allow food cooked by a non-Jew in an induction stove that the Jew switched to the on position? So did you type? These are the modern day shaylas. People have this. People actually have this.
Is Aish a necessary requirement for Bishul Akum? Like a microwave might not be shy to Bishul Akum in the first place for that reason. There's no fire.
Might not be shy to Bishul Akum. Right. Because there's no fire.
Right. So the Jews are turning on electromagnetic field.
No. But the difference is that a microwave is not cooking with heat. This is using the heat that's now generated by the interaction between the metal and the stovetop.
creates then cook heat the in the pan, the same way the microwave creates heat in the food.
Microwave only creates heat in the food. It doesn't create heat anywhere else. It's the food that heats the kli that it's in. Here it's the kli that's heating the, I think. I can't really say I understand how it works, but I'm sure some of you do. But that's the you know, so that's the right. So we're only suggesting maybe it's not shaykh to bishlakim at all. Meaning, behold, that there's no bishlakim by a microwave, which was, I think, Rabbi Sobolovsky likes to always point out that was the machlokas between the Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns and the Dunkin' Donuts in Elizabeth, the first two kosher Dunkin' Donuts in the country. Now there aren't going to be any more, apparently. But did they require you to hit the button in the microwave? Meaning, did they ask the Jew to come behind the counter to hit the button in the microwave that cooked the eggs? But nowadays, it's not shaykh anyway. It's not halal shulchan malachim. The eggs, it's not regular eggs. It's as Rabbi Eisen from our Vatikash has described it. It's like in the toy kitchens that children have. They have the plastic eggs. That's what they have at Dunkin' Donuts. So it's not at all. It's also pre-cooked, and so it's not really a shaila anymore. There is a sefer called Kashrus Lemaisa, where he says that the Rama would not be making on an induction stovetop because turning the stove on doesn't heat up the stovetop, and therefore it's more akin to this, that you're introducing into these coals that just aren't hot enough. Turning an induction oven to on is like connecting a gas line to a regular oven. It creates the potential to cook food. I mean, the oven's not installed, so I just connect the gas line. Oh, now the oven could be turned on. How does this oven turn on? How does this stove turn on? By putting the pot on. If the non-Jews want to put the pot on, that's what generates the heat. You just were machsh. You prepared it to be able to be turned on. That's too removed. There's also, that's what we say. There's also a safety feature in many contemporary ovens, where when you open the oven turns off. Meaning the fire is there, it's raging the whole time, it's cooking the food, but when you open it, it turns off. That's an important safety mechanism so that people don't burn themselves. So the Ohel Yaakov over here quotes Rabbi Yashiv, and you always have to be careful with quotes of Rabbi Yashiv, because, I don't know if you guys remember how it was with Rabbi Yashiv. It's not like he sat and investigated and, made sure he understood the mitzvahs of everything. He listened carefully to what the shaila was, and he paskined exactly what was asked of him, meaning as described. So it was always accurate as an answer to the best the person was able to describe in the 3 seconds that he had to shout the question at Rav Eliyashiv. There are videos you can find, like Rav Eliyashiv walking down the steps from the shul, and people just shouting shailas at him. And answering questions. And I'm sure every tshuva was accurate to the shayla, but you have to be very careful. Rabbi Reisman said he asked Rav David Feinstein once, he had a complicated case of a gerus or a mamzerus or something, and someone told him that Rav Eliyashiv held X. Rav David Feinstein said, unless you sat with him and explained to him, and no one gets to do that, unless you sat with him and explained to him, and made sure you went through Rachel B'chaktan, exactly what happened, no mipi ashmur from Rabbi Yashiv. It just doesn't work. You have no way to rely that that's the tshuvas that he wrote. So that's what he wrote, and he dealt with things in detail. But a lot of it's like common now. You have a svarim that come out with tshuvas of Reb Chaim Kanievsky in the back. Tshuvas of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Aser mutter. You don't know that the things were posed properly. Anyway, so Rabbi Yashiv is quoted in the Sefer El Yaakov, given that massive grain of salt. That when a Jew originally turns the oven on, and then a non-Jew opens it to put food inside, then you could be mekel, because the oven is only opened momentarily, and the heat in the oven doesn't go away in that moment that it's open. So the opening and closing the door is not a new maisa that would be considered a bishlakum, because it's the heat didn't completely die down. Now, if he did it early enough that you just turned on the oven, and when he opens it, right away, shuts up, so really had no chance to heat up in the first place, maybe that would be a bigger problem. And then there's pilot lights, which we discussed briefly. The old-fashioned stoves, I'm told in some industrial settings, there's still a pilot light that's always lit. So when you turn the stove on, the fire from the pilot light ignites the burner. So according to the Rambam, is that enough? So we said that the Ramah tells us that the minig is that if the Jew stoked the coals, then it's considered Bishul Yisrael. But, and then he says, yes, there are those that are mekel, that even a pilot light is going to be good enough, or even if it's Eish May Eish. So that's the question. Is a pilot light the same as that? That's what the Ramah says at the very end, that, you know, that there are some that are mekel, but the Aruch HaShulchan tells us we shouldn't rely on that. So Rabbi Forst quotes Rav Moshe, I think, where he compares a pilot light to the first case of the Ramah. Meaning, maybe I'm wrong about Rabbi Forst, someone close to Moshe, that compares a pilot light to the first case of the Ramah. Meaning, the fire that's lit by the non-Jew is an extension of the pilot light. It's like the Jew, it's more akin to throwing in a toothpick, to Hashlachas Kisei. And the non-Jew added the rest of the wood. However, in Chubas van Hagos, Chelek Hay, Simen Reish Mem Tes Os Gimel, Rosh Sturmbach, and I think this is the widely accepted opinion, says that pilot light is more similar to the last piece of the Ramah, where the non-Jew lit a fire from an existing flame that was lit by a Jew. And he says, even when the Ramah was makel by an existing flame, he was only makel to allow a non-Jew to cook once. But to cook indefinitely using that small candle that a Jew lit, that would not be okay. Meaning, Rosh Sturmbach makes, he says, not only is a pilot light similar to the last thing the Ramah says, it's not so partial that last thing that the Ramah says, that that's something to be used consistently. That Yesh Makilin, he says, that Yesh Orma, Fil Lochit Yisov, Lishuk Shem Kisem, Rak Shavod, Shaha Ovedes Kol Kavim, Yidlika Ha'esh, May Eishal Yisrael Shari, but to do that every single time you turn on the stove, that's not in the Eitzah. In Halicha Shlomo, on the piece on in the section of Aseres Yimei Tshuva, Rosh Shlomo Zalman was also machmir not to rely on the pilot light. Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, quoted that Moshe was not so excited about pilot lights to be matir Bishul Akum, but he wouldn't answer it. Of course, the concern with if you're going to be making with a pilot light, you also have to realize that sometimes pilot lights go out, especially if it's the kind of, in an industrial setting where the pilot light's there, it's right by the burner. It's not, meaning in the old-fashioned stoves that you have here in Washington Heights, so the pilot light is like 8 inches away from the burner or whatever, 6 inches away from the burner. But in the industrial setting, the pilot light's right there. It's right under the burner, which in a certain sense makes it worse because when it overflows, it likely puts out the pilot light also, and then the guy is going to come and he's going to relight the pilot light. So you have to be careful about that. And you also need to know where the H came from originally. Was the pilot light originally ever lit by a Jew? So Belsky has a tshuva in the OU tshuvas. That we sent out. Which tshuva number is it? I don't have it written in my notes. I just copied and pasted it. Bahad denagul lismach hamasha akum madlik eish mi pilot light shidlik Yisrael yesh laore ki yisoda heter banu el divrei hagos im kuv yugimel siv zayin. It's all based on this Ramah that the yesh amda filo chiti sol rak shakum hidlik eish me eish al yisrael shari umashmusu shumutu lechachila. Sounds like it's mutu lechachila. However, he says not so pasha that it's mutu lechachila. Like we pointed out, the Aruch HaShulchan said it's not mutu lechachila. This is based on the Issa V'Heter. V'Sham Issa, and over there in Issa V'Heter, I know I said the Maran before, because Issa V'Heter quotes the Maran, and he says, V'Sham Issa, the Issa V'Heter writes, Heshiv Maran, Shemutr B'Diavet, Kivin Shi Asa Eish, Me'eish, Shenisha Me'etmal, Me'etmal, Uba'os Eish Chita Yisrael, Ad Kal Neshom. So you see clearly, U'B'Diavet, he says, it's only in the B'Diavet case. You look in Chachmas Adam, which is the Posik Achron in his Vater, Chal Samach Vav Sivches, he says it's Mutter B'Diavet. So the Chara, we should be Machmir. However, the way the Ramah quoted it, it didn't sound like a B'Diavet in the Ramah. He just said that Yesh Omrim, quoted as Yesh Omrim, and said that it's Mutter. So it didn't say that it's a B'Diavet. So he points out that B'Taz Sivkatan Vav, that in the Taz and Sivkat Vav Pikbek Be'etzim Shita Saramat the Sfira Le'de B'chad Asagi Ratzalam are O Shgira O Chitoy O Bishol the Mahani B'Bishol come up B'Pas V'Yichmir Taz Lesser Kol Eilu B'Veso Shal Akum. But okay, the Rebelsky dismisses that, so we don't have to get into that right now. So bottom line is, Rebelsky says, you know, on the one hand, you understand why someone would be making on the pilot light because the Ramah says, and it sounds like it's even the Kulu L'Chachila, On the other hand, if you look at the sources of the Rama, it really makes it sound like it's only b'diavad. And the pilot light does seem to be very similar to that last case of the Rama. So Rabbi Kanak and Rabbi Shachter, according to the OU documents, read that tshuva and signed the tshuva. Okay, now let's get to a Sephardi that's at an Ashkenazi hotel, a restaurant, yeshiva. So what does Sephardi do? The Ashkachos in town are Ashkenazi Ashkachos, and they do not require that a Jew do all the cooking. It's much more expensive. Someone texted me this morning that I gave the example of a restaurant where you can meet the chef, as opposed to, let's say, a factory where you're never going to meet the person who did the cooking. I gave the example of Mike's, you know, Mike from Mike's Bistro, that he'll, the chef will come out, and someone texted me, Mike is a Yid. How could you give that example? That's not a Bishul Akum. So, no, I was just giving an example of how you can meet the chef in a restaurant. I know that Mike is Jewish, but just as an example. Anyway, so what do we have a Sephardi? You have an Ashkenazi Ashkacha, and a Sephardi wants to eat at the restaurant. So can a Sephardi send his child to, let's say, an Ashkenazi yeshiva that relies on the Rama? So Rav Avadi Yosef has a truth about this in Yechaveh Dat, Chelek Hei Simen Nun David. And his conclusion is a Machmir Tavolav Bracha, but Ein Limchos Biado, someone wants to be Mekel. What do you mean, Ein Limchos Biado? Rav Avadi, what happened to you? You're, you know, Manan Beit Yosef. We have to always follow Manan Beit Yosef. How could you say such a thing? So he explains. He says, in Kein Yishlanu Svek Sveka Lahadia. It's a Svek Sveka. Why? Shema halacha kapos masav shikam bishulei goyim iti rubehesek al yidei sol v'lorak v'pasachim. Maybe the Rama's right that a Jew lighting the fire is good enough. V'im timtzlom k'divrei cholkim. And if you want to say like the Mechaber says that lighting the fire is not good enough, shema halacha ka'omrim shem polim ha'maskarim b'beis Yisrael yesh lahakel. Maybe b'beis Yisrael Yisrael we can be maker like we learned yesterday. So svek sveka. You have b'beis Yisrael Yisrael and a Jew lit the fire, the two of them together is svek sveka. What's the problem with that? Maran Beit Yosef Paskins against both of those shittos. So you're making a svek sveka against Maran? Yeah. The alpha b'lishu shnei svekos im neged Maran, shekibal nerorosot. Even though both of these svekos are against Maran, that's okay. He says, v'chein kos v'gon rabbi v'ron makon misaluniki, the sefer tara samayim, shiuri tara marech samach oz zayim. Even if it's against Maran, you're allowed to be making on Svek Sveka. Why? Ki efshel shegam Maran yoda shebit starfus shneim yachdav yesh lahatim. We only know that Maran didn't was uncomfortable relying on Beis Yisrael Yisrael alone. We know that Maran was uncomfortable relying on Jew lighting the fire alone. But maybe he himself would have been comfortable with the two of them together. V'chein kosev b'shut sharei Ezra Traub, chelik yoredeya simen beiz, v'shekein kosev estei chemer, u'me'ata ha'dover pashut, shegam b'nidon shloni yesh makom nirchav lismoch lo'akal gam l'svavadim, u'bnei edut ha'mizrach. V'chein kosev b'shut min ches yisrach, chelik zayin simen sanat beiz, u'mikol makom emakom alatzotov alabrach. So Avadi says, yeah, what's b'samechan? There are enough shittos b'samechan. So can a Sephardi go to an Ashkenazi yeshiva? Yes. If he wants to be machmir, tavelav bracha. There are yeshivas where you know, the Sephardim will go in before breakfast or whatever and turn on, you know, when the chef is almost done, you know, or the cook is almost done, they'll turn on the fires and put the food on the thing. Not turn on the fire, the fire is ready to turn on, but they'll put the food in the oven so that it can be bishul Yisrael l'shita sam. Now it happens to be Rav Sturmbach and Chuvus van Hagos also writes that the Chachila, he says even the Chachila, Chelik Hesem Reishon and Aleph, because, and he has a different svara, which is difficult. He says, what are your minhagim based on? Meaning, why do you follow Maran on this issue? Because your father follows Maran on this issue. But when you're a yeshiva boy, you should follow the minhagim of your rebbe. Well, that seems a little... Your rebbe is like your father, so just follow all of his minhagim, as long as you're in yeshiva. When you leave yeshiva, you'll go back to your father's minhagim. Is that true? For everything else, you can just follow your rebbe's minhagim? That seems a little bit of a stretch. Rav Shechter often points out, or not often, but sometimes points out, that you know, we think Sephardim follow the Mechaber. It's not true. The Mechaber follows Sephardim. Meaning, the Mechaber's Pesach Halacha reflects what was always Sephardic practice. It's not like there's a rule that all Sephardim have to follow the Mechaber. The Mechaber wrote the book to reflect Sephardic practice, and it was Sephardic practice before the Mechaber came along. It's the Shita Sarambam, it's the Shita Sarif. So it always follows like that. So a Sephardi boy should just say that my minhag is like my Rebbe? I'm much more comfortable with Rav Avdia Sfek Sveika than I am with that.
Two things. Number one, according to Rav Sternbach, would nobody in this room be allowed to eat turkey?
This nobody would not be allowed. I don't know if everybody would be.
Where was the Jews again?
It's in Chelek Heis and Reish Lunav. Tell me if I misquoted it.
And the second question is,
I did not look it up before she heard, so I mean, I just have it in my notes from last time, but that's what I seem to have.
The tears we give her of Avadia, that perhaps the Beis Yosef would agree if we give both combined. Wouldn't he have said that? He meant.
No, because he doesn't create every situation of a tzivuk. Meaning he dealt with the issue of Beis Yosef. Is that a good
and
enough?
He said no, and then he also said
and
no.
He dealt with the issue of here, and he said no. But he didn't deal with the case where one overlaps with the other.
But that
meaning
wouldn't be.
Halacha's dynamic.
Wouldn't we have thought that would have been
okay
to him? That, like, he would have thought about that?
Okay, I hear. There should have been some indication somewhere.
Isn't there also a third suffix to add for Avadia, which is that maybe the workers are like shvachos in the yeshiva?
We learned yesterday also that shvachos should not. Yeah. Right? I guess you could add that one too. Yeah.
Is anything Jewish owned to be so Yisrael?
Pashtus. Pashtus, I don't think so. Okay. Shulchan Aruch and Siv Ches says that if a Jew puts the food on the fire, Nasi Yisrael Kedera Ala Eish, Vesilko Ba'o Vichon Vechzira, then the Jew took the food off the fire, and the guy puts it back on, also, can you give a Machu Ben Jusai, Shushlus Bishul Gishilka? It had to have been at Machu Ben Jusai already. Then and only then is it going to be mutter. Some of the Mahadran Ashkachos in Eretz Yisrael don't have a full-time mashkiach, but they have a Jew cook their meat until it's a third cooked of its cooking time. Then they freeze it, and then when someone orders food from the restaurant, they take out the one-third cooked meat and have the guy slap it on the grill. Good, no good, where do you find that?
Yeah, it's just heating up.
That's exactly right. The question is, how do you define one third of the bishul, right? So that's a question of Hilchos Shabbos, right? How do you define Kamach Ben Jusai? Is one third of the bishul, because bishul is a qualitative change, it's not a quantitative change. And the process speeds up as you go. Meaning, let's say something has to be cooked for 30 minutes, the first 10 minutes doesn't do much cooking. The next 10 minutes does a lot more, and the last 10 minutes does a lot, you know, it accelerates as it goes. So how do you measure a third cook? So some of the folks will say, how do you measure how do you put a number to a qualitative change? So it must be that it's a third of the time. So they rely on that, right? They're relying on that, that it's on the stove for a third of the time. Problem is it really edible? I don't know. But, you know, most of the Ashkachas here, I think, that we would follow in places and places require Mashkiach Tmidi. They always have Mashkiach around. In Eretz Yisrael, it's just like, there are a million restaurants. You know, so it must be much harder to have so many Mashkiach Tmidi. But that's this halacha that they follow. But certainly, if they get it to the point that it's edible, then that's Mefurish over here. In Sif Yud Aleph, Shulchan Aruch writes, "Hiniach Yisrael al gavei ish v'hiniachu v'kachavim l'shamro v'hafach bo v'in yaduim silko v'kachav matzlo yigil machu ben shusai mutik." And the Rama says, because the Savik divayim l'hakel, v'chein kol Savik v'shulei v'kachav m'chiyatzi bo mutik. So a very important klal comes out of Sif Yud Aleph, that any Savik in v'shulakub is mutik. So that's critical. So if a non-Jew removed the dish from the fire and then put it back on the fire, but you're not sure if he removed it before machu ben shusai or after, or if he dealt with it before Malcolm Ben Jusai, but you don't know if he really removed it, Safik. So Safik Lahak. Then in Sif Yud Beis, I'm just trying to fly through these Sifim because it gets really exciting at the end again. Then in Sif Yud Beis, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that if a Jew or a non-Jew salts small fish, and they're edible, until they're edible, and then a non-Jew cooks them, so the fish are mutter, right? It's like it's partially cooked. And then if an oven chavim cooks it, roasts it afterwards, it's mutter. Taz sivkat nid beis. The kivan shana chalim kimol shein chayin al yedei hamalicha. Eidma mishum mishal oven chavim. That they're nechal kemoshul chay, because once you salted them, they're edible. So good, so now it's nechal kemoshul chay. Says the Taz, but what about the malicha itself? Didn't that get the cooking underway? V'yala malicha tchila lo gazru. Shlo gazru rak b'mishul shal yedei eish. Only bishul with fire, bishul with salt is not bishul. Yeah. Aye, what about in all shulchan malachim? It is all shulchan malachim. Once you salt it, it's all shulchan malachim. Or it's a different type of fish, and we talked about before that are not all shulchan malachim. Fine. So Taz explained that only cooking raw food was included in the gezeira. Salting, or as we'll soon see, smoking raw food is not included. So since small fish become 100% edible after you salt them, and now the non-Jew is cooking them, he's cooking something that's ready. It's already nechal tovoshu chai. So you see that ein bishul achar bishul, with regard to bishul akum l'chora applies. Meaning, if food was prepared in a way, and then in any which way, and then a non-Jew recooked it, it's mutter. Because once it's cooked by a Jew, it's mutter. So if you order a kosher meal on a plane, and then a non-Jew cooked it, the food is mutter, even if there's soup on the menu, because soup is edible cold. Right? So as long as it's edible that way, then it's going to be fine. The Shulchan Aruch then goes to say, if it was a big fish that was salted by a Jew, right? Aval dagim luchim gedolim, einam nechal malidei adchak. Ooh. Then it's only edible on the day of Chak. V'fichach, m'sal no v'chav, masurim. But v'yesh matir. So the reason, big salted fish, you would only eat it if you're really desperate. So the non-Jew cooks it, he's really cooking raw fish. But then he says, some are matir. Meaning even food that's not chal yedei chak, that's what they're arguing about. Food that's not chal yedei chak, is that considered something that's nechal kamo shulchai? So the Aruch HaShulchan and Sivcha Vav says you should be machmir by big salted fish that were cooked by non-Jews, and the Kaf HaChayim was matir, but only b'shas chak or hefse meruba. Meaning you have 2 days of Shulchan Aruch over here, because big fish is nechal yedei chak after it's salted. So Aruch HaShulchan says be machmir, and the Kaf HaChayim says you can be make b'shas chak or hefse meruba. It seems that it's the same thing repeated again in Sif Yudalim and Sif Tetzvav, that raw food which is only nechal yedei chak, a raw egg, bitter dates, is usher if they were cooked by a non-Jew. Now let's just focus for a moment on that point about cooking with a fire. Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yud Gimel, we'll come back to Yudal Hesvav also, because there's more to say over there. But Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yud Gimel tells us that the Gzeres Chazal was only about cooking with a fire. Salting, smoking, soaking, all of that, right? Kavush, any of that by a non-Jew is mutter, even if it makes the food edible. So a guy does that, a guy does the smoking that makes it edible, it's mutter. So once it's edible, then it's nachal kamo shulchai. If a guy cooks it, it's fine. So that brings us to microwave cooking a little bit, and to raw eggs also, and cranberries and things like that. So in a microwave, many achronim aser, because a microwave is a normal way of cooking, it's a darach bishul. So if non-Jew is heating up a ready-cooked food, so if it's ready-cooked, then it's obviously mutter. Ein bishul achar bishul. But if a non-Jew is cooking raw food in a microwave, let's say a non-Jew makes salmon or eggs in a microwave, then the food is going to be asr, because microwaving is a normal way of cooking. There are posts that were made on that, though. It's a question, meaning, you have this discussion in Hilchos Shabbos, whether microwave is considered bishul, and we had the discussion when it came to bishul basar v'challah. But by bishul akum, it's not necessarily the same question. I mean, by bishul basar v'challah, you have to technically, perhaps, you have to fit the technical definition of bishul, because that's the lashon of the Torah, lo sevashal di b'chalei v'mal. By bishul b'shabbos, also has to be technically bishul. Is that same necessarily true by me'achalei akum? Me'achalei akum is the preparation of food done by Gayim in a way that's significant. Or something that's akin to bishul, something that's the normal way to cook something. So we had that discussion earlier in the year in terms of whether they're all the same necessarily and what the hagdara of bishul is. So we should just be aware. Over here also, it's machlokas. Rav Scheinberg was makel. He thought it's not a fire, and the Gzer of Chazal is only cooking on a fire, as the Ramah clearly says. So, right, that relates back to the induction stovetop as well. Now, in Sif Yudalid, Shulchan Aruch tells us that an egg is subject to Bishul Akum. Why? Beitza afal pi shiru'uya legoma chaya in Bishul Vichav Masura. Even though you can have a raw egg, it's still going to be asir. Why? I can eat a raw egg, yeah, but it's only Adi Ad Chak. So if something I can only eat Adi Ad Chak, and then the guy cooks it, that's going to be asir. That's a shayla, you know, elsewhere also. There's a shayla in Hilchos Shabbos by Muktza, in Simin Shem Ches. Shulchan Aruch has such a discussion. Raw eggs, meat, fish, raw meat, raw fish, it's all Muktza. So Shulchan Aruch over there says that raw meat is not mukta. Why is raw meat not mukta? Because you can eat raw meat. People eat raw meat all the time. So the later post can say, what are you talking about? No one eats raw meat anymore. So mukta is one of those areas of halacha where the same object that used to be mukta is not mukta anymore. The same object that used to not be mukta now is mukta. So raw meat maybe wasn't mukta once upon a time, because who in the world would eat raw meat? I'm sorry, maybe it was not muktzah once upon a time because people would typically eat raw meat, but now it's become muktzah because nobody eats raw meat. Although some people, there is some way to prepare meat raw that's apparently edible. I mentioned this to you once. I was in a restaurant in Israel by, what do they call it? Lechem u'basar, basar lechem, you know that restaurant? So I was there and I saw something on the menu and it described it as meat, or it looked like it said meat. So I said, I'll have that, please. And the waitress brought it. I was like, is this meat or fish? Because it tasted a little fishy to me. She's like, it's raw. It's meat, but it's raw. I'm like, why are you serving me raw meat? She said, everyone knows, that's what that is. She said, you ordered it with such confidence, I didn't think I needed to tell you. It sounded really good when I ordered it, apparently. But apparently people do eat raw meat. So the Shulchan Aruch says that raw meat is edible, so it's not mukzah. But nowadays people don't eat raw meat, so it is mukzah according to most achronim. Same with raw eggs. So in Simen Shin Yud, Shulchan Aruch says that if you have an egg and after collecting all your eggs from whatever, from the chicken coop, you change your mind. And you say, you know what? I don't want an egg. I want a pet chicken. So you take the egg back and you put it under the chicken. Right? You put it under the hen or whatever. Because you want it to hatch. And then you decide on Shabbos, you know what? I'm more in the mood for an egg. So you go back, you know, scare the chicken away and grab the egg. So the Shulchan Aruch says that's not called Huksum Mitaita. And you can go back and take it. What does that tell you about the mukzah status of eggs? It's obviously not mukzah. Even in that case, where you put it back under the thing to hatch, it's not mukzah. So why is an egg not mukzah? So is it just because it was more common to eat raw eggs in those days? Or is that something that's even true b'zman hazeh, that an egg is just not mukzah? So that's the discussion in the Acharon Hilchos Shabbos. So they bring a raya from this sif. Meaning, was the Shulchan Aruch saying an egg is not mukzah? Because everyone eats raw eggs. In times of the Mechaber, everyone ate raw eggs. Or is the Shulchan Aruch saying, no, even though nobody eats raw eggs, it's very rare. I think it was in the Rocky movies. Rocky Balboa used to, you know, before your time, but he used to drink raw eggs before the big fight. I still, to this day, I don't know what that's for. Like, why you needed to eat raw eggs? Why couldn't you cook it? I don't know. Maybe just show how tough you are. But it was like a big scene, like after he runs up the mountain, drinks a raw egg or something. So is the mechaber in Hilchos Shabbos assuming that it's not mukzah because he assumes that everyone used to eat it, or is he assuming that no, even though very few people ate it, but that was good enough to make it not mukzah? So they use this sif as a raya that raw eggs were not eaten normally in times of Shulchan, right? Because beitza afal pi shiru'uya legom mechaya in bishul avichavim asura. Why is it asur? If it was normal to eat in the times of the Mechaber, why would it be asur? It should be something that's nechal kamo shulchai. That's the raya that they bring. Not necessarily a great raya, because meat is also not mukta, and meat is subject to bishul akum, right? Meaning, in Hilchos bishul akum, for sure meat is subject to bishul akum, and yet the Mechaber paskens meat's not mukta in Hilchos mukta. So obviously there is that in-between point where it's enough al yidei al chak that it would be a major contribution for the person to cook it for you, But nevertheless, since it is somewhat edible, it's considered to be not mukta. L'chora, nowadays, it's even less common to eat. So that's what they also quote from Rav Eliyashiv, that there's a problem of basus l'davar ha'asr if you leave the raw eggs on your door of your refrigerator. And you open the refrigerator door and there are raw eggs there, so the whole refrigerator door becomes a basus l'davar ha'asr. Maybe, maybe not. Usually it's a basus l'davar ha'asr u l'davar ha'mutar, because usually raw eggs are not the only thing that's on your refrigerator door. And then Sivtes Vav, Tamarim Hamarim Ktsas, Sheinim Ne'achal Mele Yedeid Chak, and Bishlam Ne'achal Masurim. If you have slightly bitter Tamarim that are also only Ne'achal Yedeid Chak, and then a guy cooks them, they're going to be Asir. Take a look at Shach Sivkat Nyutas. Shach Sivkat Nyutas. Anyone read this? It doesn't read straight. You have these Tamarim Hamarim that are only Ne'achal Yedeid Chak. So the guy cooks them, it's also because he's contributing something major. Is that a crab apple? They have these apples that aren't so good. Even though most of the eating of them is done with sli and bishel, meaning most of the time people will cook it, but it's still mutter. If a guy cooked it, why? The mikol makom ne'achol gam kin chayim. Because after all, it's also eaten raw. Meaning, most of the time you want to eat it, it's eaten cooked. But since it's also edible raw, so if a guy cooks it, it's not bishalakum. V'od, another reason it's not bishalakum, sharov shevimino ikra achilasim chay. Most of the time it's eaten raw. What? He just said the whole idea is that even though it's only sometimes eaten raw, it's not bishalakum. Most of the time it's cooked. Only sometimes not eaten raw. Va'ot sharov, rove of the time it's ikra achilas chay. So the truth is, the word I just brushed over is what makes it clear. And the Gili Marsha earlier in the Simon, you know, highlights this. That it says, and the earlier, I think in my Shulchan Aruch at home, I think the word is missing. I think they added in afterwards, if I'm not mistaken. I have to check again. I think the Shulchan Aruch, that I think I have to check. Someone, maybe someone has known Shulchan Aruch. Va'ud sharov ikar achilas, sharov ikar achilas amchai. He adds, and it's more accurate based on what it actually says in the Rishonim. Va'ud sharov shebemino ikar achilas amchai. Meaning, the Shach means to say, the rov shebimino are ne'achol chai, even though rov of this particular fruit is not eaten raw. It means that even though rov dates, it means that rov apples are eaten raw. Rov crab apples are not eaten raw. But since rov apples are eaten raw, and some crab apples are eaten raw, so that's enough to make it not a problem of bishlakum. That would l'chora mean that he's disagreeing with the mechaber. Right? Because what does the Mechaber say? Tamarim, amarim. Now let me ask you, rov tamarim, eaten raw? Rov tamarim? Yeah. Tamarim hamarim, no. Tamarim hamarim are like the crab apples of dates. I don't know what they're called. So, rov tamarim hamarim are not eaten raw. In bishlo v'chavim, asurin. So it turns out the Shach is really arguing on the Mechaber. If you have something that rove of that min is eaten raw, and a miut of that, and within the subcategory of what you're trying to eat, only a miut is eaten raw. So it's machlokas mechaber in the shach whether it's bishlakum. Are string beans subject to bishlakum? Vegetina. Anyone eat string beans here? No, the Gashmu leaders, yeah, some, okay? What do you tell you, Ben? String beans, subject to bishlakum.
I wouldn't eat them raw.
You wouldn't eat them raw. Does anybody?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can. It's not as delicious, but you can. Rove are not eaten raw. Sometimes they're eaten raw. So is that the same as tamarim hamarim? It's at least as bad as tamarim hamarim, because tamarim hamarim has two things in its favor, that some people eat the tamar mamarim raw, and rov shebimin is eaten raw, and afal pikein the mechaber is machmir. So lechora by string beans, yes, nechol kamo shechai, but not really. Most people don't do that. Rov is not eaten raw because it's not as good.
Is nechol alayde hatzmak the same as some people eat it that way? Like tefillah. Tefillah amarim.
Yeah, I understood them to be the same. We say nechal alidei chak is no. I'm a person that eats it cooked. But if it's alidei chak, if I'm camping somewhere and then whatever, I wouldn't consider eating a raw piece of meat, but I'll eat a raw piece of this. I hear. Yeah, that could be. This relates a lot to the OU's document about cranberries. So maybe, you know, maybe we'll do one more Bishul HaKamashir, because there's a lot of good lumpes in the end also. So maybe we'll do cranberries and then the dishes that are used for Bishul HaKam, and the very important Ramah at the end. If you're mevashel for, if a guy is mevashel for a chola on Shabbos, are you allowed to eat it on Motzai Shabbos? But it seems to be stirus between here and Aruch Chaim, and we'll try to deal with how to resolve all those stirus. If anyone has access to the Mechze Eliyahu, he has a nice piece on that. Probably just go through it. And that will be Ezra Shem for Bishul HaKam. And then on Monday, I guess Chalav HaKam. Right? I guess that's the next piece. Okay? There will be Shir on Sunday. I was mistaken yesterday because of the rain in the forecast. They canceled the renewal event on the 5,000 Sunday. Not canceled, they postponed it to the next Sunday. So there probably won't be Shir the next Sunday, but there will be Ezra Shem on Sunday. Okay.
Maybe